This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thanks for staying with us here on The Morning Run. You're with Lin-Mark, Wang Xiaoning and Roshan Kanisen. It is 7.36 in the morning, and in about half an hour, we're going to be having The Breakfast Grill, where, Xiaoning, you'll be speaking with Dr. Dato' Azrin Mohamed Noor, who's Managing Director of Sedania Innovator.
Yeah, Sedania Innovator is an ACE-listed company. They've had a bit of a bumpy ride in the last 3 years, with only 1 year of showing profit. So Dr. Azrin's going to come on the show. He's the Managing Director, and he's going to tell us about whether the company is finally on track to achieve sustainable profits. We're also going to take a look at its many various business segments. They've got like fintech, sharing telco platforms, IoT, and the latest thing, esports.
Interesting. So be sure to catch that conversation after the 8 o'clock news. And you know, if you haven't already voted on the poll we have running on the BFM Twitter account, that's at BFM Radio, do let us know what you think. We're asking you, are you more confident in PKR now that Dato' Sri Anwar Ibrahim and Dato' Sri Azmin Ali have met? We've had about 70 votes so far and 40% have said, who cares? So do let us know what you think. We'll be taking a look at the results of that in just a little while. In the meantime, though, taking a look this morning at the banking sector in the Asia Pacific. If the banking sector is hoping for brighter prospects in 2020, well, it looks like they might just be disappointed.
Yeah, a recent report from Fitch Ratings says that the Asia Pacific banks will continue to be challenged by the global macroeconomic factors next year, hence affecting earnings prospects. I think we've been covering that during the first part of the hour.
So for some thoughts on this, we turn to Tanya Gold, Head of South and Southeast Asian Banks at Fitch Ratings. Thank you very much for joining us, Tanya. Now, going into 2020, what are some of your key expectations of the Asian banking sector?
Well, for 2020, our outlook on most APAC banking systems is stable. However, four of the region's developed market banking systems and three of the emerging market banking systems are on negative outlook. We've recently changed Japan's banking system outlook from negative to stable, and Sri Lanka's banking system outlook has been revised to stable from negative. In the developing APAC banking system, we see downside risk to financial performance has increased in Australia, Hong Kong, and Singapore, where they have common headwinds such as weaker economic growth, lower interest rates, and stronger competition. The three emerging APAC banking systems where we have negative sector outlooks are for China, India, and Indonesia, all of which continue to face asset quality challenges. China and India are also under pressure to improve earnings and capital to support growth. We expect leverage to continue to rise in emerging APAC banking systems as credit growth outstrips GDP growth. This is likely most acute in China, where corporate leverage is very high and household lending continues to expand, but also Malaysia and Thailand have high household debt. And we expect household debt to grow swiftly in Vietnam and China in the coming years.
So what are the likely key challenges for profitability in 2020? Should we expect to see APAC banks take on more risk to mitigate pressures on profits then?
Sure. I think the key challenge we see for many of the countries across APAC in terms of profitability is likely to be caused by net interest margin pressure, especially in the emerging markets. And we see this as likely to continue for the foreseeable future. Our view is that profitability challenges have caused many banks to take on incrementally higher risk, and again, we expect this to continue. We see this most likely to influence ratings in the short term, be it negative rating action or just holding back on positive action. Additional risk-taking is materializing in varying channels, including expansion into riskier markets by many of the banks and higher loan concentrations in certain sectors. In some markets, banks have supported asset growth by selectively relaxing their underwriting standards, noticeably for consumer finance and SMEs, with cheaper loan pricing or lower collateral coverage. Banks are also raising their exposure to property, both directly and indirectly, via, for example, lending to non-bank financial entities. India would be a key example of where we've been seeing this. So downside risk to the ratings could increase if banks don't strengthen their loss absorption buffers in line with this additional risk-taking, even though the implications might not become evident for a while, whilst the operating environment remains quite benign overall.
Now, pinpointing a few countries, you've got a negative sector outlook on China, India, Indonesia and Japan. All of these are huge economies in the region. Why the negative outlook?
The negative outlooks are related to specific issues within each banking system rather than the size. So, for example, with Japan, where we've just changed it to negative, that's more related to the challenges the banks have in their business models and with their overseas operations, which is making earnings growth difficult without the banks taking on more risks. For China, the negative outlook is mainly due to trade tensions and weakening economic growth, which could cause greater asset impairments and earnings volatility. We also think that the sector as a whole remains undercapitalized in China. India's negative outlook is due to our expectations of continued weak performance and ongoing capital shortfalls, especially in the state-owned banks. So we estimate that Indian banks are currently $7 billion US dollars short on capital to provide an adequate buffer above the regulatory minimum. And we recently conducted a stress test on the non-bank financial companies' exposure that the banks themselves have. Were this exposure to worsen and the crisis broaden, we estimate under this scenario the banks would need $10 billion US dollars of capital to meet regulatory minimums, and this shortfall could rise to $50 billion were we to consider an adequate buffer above the regulatory minimum. Indonesia, again, it's a different reason. The negative outlook there reflects rising asset quality risks and tighter funding conditions impacting profitability. We've also taken into account external risks such as weak commodity prices, a slowing Chinese economy, and increasing global trade frictions, which are all also likely to have an impact in Indonesia. So as you can see, it's quite different. It's quite different impacts for quite different reasons for each of the four countries that you've mentioned.
And Tanya, how does the slowing global growth and escalating trade tensions then factor into your outlook for the overall APAC banks in 2020?
So our outlook is that economic growth is likely to remain subdued relative to long-term averages. We believe the external headwinds are impacting Singapore, Greater China and North Asia more as they're exposed to slower global capital flows and slower trade. Should there be a faster than expected slowdown in China, these markets will all be affected potentially in terms of asset quality and earnings due to their direct exposure or their local economies being impacted. However, slowing growth is challenging for most banks, especially where some of the credit risks have increased in recent years and leverage has risen or remains very high. Examples of this would be Australia, New Zealand, Singapore, Korea and Taiwan. We would also highlight, though, in many markets, policymakers are taking proactive measures to help banks manage any potential slowdown that might be coming. So that should help mitigate some of the potential global slowdown.
Thank you so much, Tanya. And that was Tanya Gold, Head of South and Southeast Asian Banks at Fitch Ratings, telling us about some of the challenges that they anticipate banks in the Asia Pacific will see going forward. And that does include things like higher costs and even interest margin compression.
Yeah, I think at the end of it, there is this general trend of a slowdown in the region. But at the same time, the banks have been under pressure, of course, to maintain profitability. And as a result, perhaps they have taken on more risk than they have in the past. So it's a combination of issues which probably will impact banks coming into 2020. Now, she does note some soft spots in particular countries. I mean, China's a concern for her. India's a bit of concern for their own respective reasons. China perhaps is undercapitalized. So is India. I mean, especially the state-owned enterprise banks may need as much as $7 billion US dollars because they're short in capital. Indonesia, of course, is facing some negative asset quality issues. And if commodity prices actually come under pressure, then even more bad news for Indonesia. But overall, I think despite the tone of the phone call being somewhat negative, Fitch has continued to say that in their reports that ratings outlook still remains generally stable. I don't think we'll be facing some sort of financial crisis that we saw in 2008, like what we faced. So hopefully, I mean, things might be a little bit more shaky, but not as bad as they were.
Yeah, I guess it's just that highlighting the fact that there's a bit of pressure on profits in 2020.
Absolutely. Now, turning our attention also in another international headline to Saudi Aramco, because Saudi Aramco announces its final price for its IPO today. They're selling a 1.5% stake in the company through the listing, and they're reportedly considering pricing at the top end of their range, which would make it the world's biggest ever new listing.
Yes, and with that, the deal would raise about 25.6 billion US dollars if the price tops goes at the top end. The top end of the IPO range values the company at about 1.71 trillion US dollars. Now, that is a lot of money.
Amazing.
Well, I think they're being very brave because so far the Saudi Aramco bankers are already, you know, voicing confidence that there's enough investor interest to pull off a reduced initial public offering that the state giant launched this week. So that's why they're going for this 1.71 trillion price tag, which is actually, like you say, at the top end of the range. I didn't expect it to come at that point.
Especially considering all the news we were hearing leading up to this, that there weren't enough investors, that they were looking to local market to really boost this up. Because end of the day, you can price the IPO however you want, but if no one buys, that's going to really not look good on your books.
Well, it's a very small issue. It's only 1.5% of the entire Aramco. And like you said, it's just a mini domestic issue. I think there's enough Saudi funds up there to mop up that amount. And in the last few days, luckily for them, crude oil price has been okay. It's actually been up almost 3.58% overnight to $63 a barrel. And it's actually up almost 14% year to date. So good news for them. A little bit of a boost, perhaps.
Yeah. And on the subject of oil, OPEC Plus is also set to meet today in Vienna, and they are expected to maintain a fairly tight rein on their oil output in efforts to keep global prices from tumbling below $65 a barrel. Now, Saudi Arabia is pushing for OPEC and its allies, though, to announce deeper cuts in production ahead of a potential glut going into 2020.
Yeah, and some analysts have warned that the crude market could be heavily oversupplied in the first half of next year, and as it is, I mean, that could be something that will impact us right directly in Malaysia, because we rely on crude oil prices for our budget needs, a significant part, not an entire thing.
55 billion ringgit contribution to our budget.
Also not a small sum there.
No, not a small sum.
Oh, really? I was going to say pocket change. I mean, what's 55 billion ringgit compared to Saudi Aramco's 1.7 trillion valuation? But right now we are heading into a few messages. And up next, we'll be speaking with Dr. Hamidin Abdul Hamid of Ilham Centre on what's going on over with PKR. So be sure to stay tuned for that. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.